make it tall, gently weeps.
How do you sleep at night? The perfect tool for the radical right. You think it's over now, we indict you for the death of democracy. By a powerful few. Independent counsel, independent of who? It sounds pretty good.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Walmart has agreed to pay more than $134,000 to settle charges alleging that it broke child labor laws. 24 violations were charged against the world's largest retailer, including allegations it had teenagers use paper balers and forklifts. According to U.S. child labor law, anyone under the age of 18 is prohibited from using hazardous equipment. The store denied the allegations, but agreed to pay the penalties anyway.
The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra has been locked out by management for more than 6 weeks, but new talks are set for Wednesday. Jan Gippo is a spokesperson for the Musicians Union. He says St. Louis orchestra musicians are paid $15,000 a year less than orchestras in similar cities.
If we accept what he's offering, this orchestra will leave the one percentile of great symphony orchestras in the world and fall to 19th and become a revolving door orchestra where the young players will lead.
Gippo says management took away prepaid health insurance from locked out musicians in St. Louis.
Canceling our health insurance is, in labor terms, is a very adversarial position to take, very combative. If we didn't take that position and he locked us out by 7 o'clock on Monday morning, long before we're going to take a vote, before the orchestra got the proposal to take a vote, he'd lock the door. That's why it's a lockout.
The union musicians are willing to take $10,000 a year less than peers in similar cities, but they say quality of the orchestra is now the main issue.
Hundreds of workers at Garlock Sealing Technologies in New York left their jobs and hit the picket lines on Sunday. After overwhelmingly rejecting the latest contract offer on Saturday, employees represented by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers voted to strike. Union representatives say the contract would have reduced pay and allow the company to change the schedules of workers every 2 weeks. The gasket and sealing product company had asked for $3 million in concessions from the union in an attempt to remain competitive. Company spokesmen have said that the plant may have to close if demands are not met. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The number of gays and lesbians being discharged from the military has dropped significantly since September 11, 2001. According to new numbers released by the Defense Department, the number of discharges under the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy is nearly half of what it was at that time. All military branches have seen drops in discharges. Across the board, the number kicked out in 2001 was 1,227. In 2004, it was 653.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. Or call 215-563-7110.
Even from the convoluted depths of Lewis Carroll's fertile imagination, where down is up and wrong is right, the Alice in Wonderland author could not have conjured up a scene as bizarre as George W.'s $40 million inaugural extravaganza. Lavish balls, sumptuous gourmet meals, copious champagne brunches, indulgent corporate-sponsored receptions in posh private clubs, a cornucopia of excess for the privileged and connected, dancing in a swirl of political self-congratulation, and in anticipation of political rewards to come for those elites who picked up the $40 million tab. All this unseemly splurging while the loved ones of Americans who are neither privileged nor connected are mired in the deadly mayhem of George W.'s disastrous war in Iraq. One visual summed up the moral divide between those few so gaily dancing the war away in Washington and those many trapped so miserably in the brutal reality of Iraq. It was the recurring scene of stretch Hummer limousines ferrying the resplendent Gucci crowd from one gaudy gathering to the next, while soldiers driving real Humvees had been denied the protective armor that could save their lives. Indeed, $40 million could buy quite a bit of armor. In 1945, when our troops were in another raging war, Franklin Roosevelt rightly insisted on modesty and austerity for his inaugural, even noting in his formal address that it was appropriate, quote, that the form of this inauguration be simple and its words brief. But in the wonderland of Bush world, modesty is no virtue and hubris is to be celebrated. So party down, y'all! This is Jim Hightower saying, there were even special inaugural blowouts for the 20-somethings, including George's own war-age daughters who loudly proclaimed their support for Daddy's war, but not so much that they would join it. In Bush's world, the elites declare war. Other people do the fighting and dying.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And happy Monday, my friends. Welcome to the program. Tom Hartman here with you. A point of personal privilege, one of the rare opportunities, I suppose, you have, and you know, we all have in our various work lives. Having read the Harvard prayer studies, where they showed that when people prayed for people, they got better, and being a big believer in this my whole life, I just wanted to, this is my point of personal privilege, as I said. 2 o'clock this morning, my father had a heart attack. He's in the hospital in surgery right now. His name is Carl Hartman, and if you could remember him in your prayers, if you're so inclined, I would certainly appreciate that, or whatever your, you know, light or whatever. Okay, here on the Wall Street Journal today, we have two really interesting juxtaposition. And leading out of this, I want to get into a conversation here with Yaron Brook, who is the executive director of the Ayn Rand Institute, and one of my favorite guests, and a fine man. And they have just published an article that I think steps off from this also. But first, the Wall Street Journal, just very quickly. On the op-ed piece, on the editorial page, an article by a fellow by the name of Laffer. Mr. Laffer is founder and chairman of Laffer Associates, blah, 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 blah. And it's a love letter to George W. Bush, basically. And he says, from the standpoint of seeing the big picture, President Bush is unique among politicians in that he truly comprehends that the U.S. today is the single best performing economy ever to have existed. Why? Well, for example, he says, tax rates on capital are at the lowest levels in my lifetime. In other words, if you make your living as a capitalist, you pay the lowest tax rates in the history of this guy's life. If you make your living working for a living, screw you, buddy. That's it's not said that way, but it's certainly implicit. And then, on the other hand, you go back to page 3 of the Wall Street Journal, and here's this the outlook by Timothy Apple. And he says, productivity growth appears to be slowing in the U.S. Does that mean the pace of hiring is about to pick up significantly? Don't count on it. He goes on to point out larger economic forces, from the growing ability of companies to meet more domestic demand with productivity outside the country, production outside the country, to lingering anxiety about overexpansion, to further technological advances will curb the appetite for workers. There will be job growth, but it will be moderate and disappointing to those waiting for the big burst. This an opinion piece, of course, from the Wall Street Journal today. In manufacturing, the winds of productivity keep blowing strong, and productivity is going up because work is being offshored, offsourced, outsourced. You get more work done with fewer dollars. You might have more people, but fewer dollars because you can get it done in India, right? They call that increased productivity. That, among other things, of course. Ending any hope that this part of the economy will see a bounce in jobs. Again, reading from Timothy Apple's piece here in today's Wall Street Journal. Manufacturing productivity grew a muscular 5.6% in the fourth quarter, up from 4.2% in the third. And sure enough, factories cut 25,000 jobs in January, according to the Labor Department, after shedding 7,000 in December. Now, here's where we get to this this piece. It was written by Elon. Horno? Yaron.
Yeah.
Yaron Brook with us. Aaron Yaron is the executive director of the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. And I'm always pleased to have you on, Yaron. You folks are stand-up folks. I mean, you're absolutely honest about what you're about. You don't play the games that so many conservatives play. I realize you wouldn't call yourself a conservative. You'd call yourself a radical. But really, so much of conservative economics today is founded in the philosophical world that you guys occupy. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I appreciate that. And I wanted to say I'm sorry to hear about your dad. I hope he does well.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I hope so, too. The author of this piece, Elon Yorno?
Giorno.
Okay, Giorno. It's titled Rewarding the MVPs of the Business World. And he points out that 5.4 million is the average starting salary for quarterbacks. The 25 highest paid CEOs in 2003 earned an average of 32.7 million per year. And there were a good number whose compensation packages approached the 100 million mark. And it seems that you guys think that that's a great thing.
Yes, I think there are definitely CEOs out there that don't own it. There are a few that are bad apples that don't produce, but the majority of CEOs do a phenomenal job. They are responsible for the increased productivity, which I think is a good thing in this economy, the increased wealth in our country, and I think as a consequence deserve every penny that they earn.
Could be. Let's examine that. There's a couple of different questions here that I think go to the heart of this. The first, the example that's used in this article is Jack Welch. Jack Welch is kind of iconic. You know, he wrote this autobiography that some parts of it have been debunked. Other parts of it, tell the story of a guy who really climbed up the corporate ladder and really did something with his corporation. GE, starting in 1981 when Welch took over. Their sales rose from $27.2 billion to $173.2 billion today. Over that same period, profits rose from $1.6 to $10.7 billion a year. 1999, they were the second most profitable company in the world. Sounds great. However, Reg Jones, the guy who preceded him, when he was presiding over GE, which began in 1972 with Jones, GE had an annual growth rate of 12%. Earnings had grown at 16%, which is about the same. Mm-hmm. So why is Jack Welch worth hundreds of millions more than his predecessor?
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with the environment in which Jack Welch presided over GE. It's, from the 1980s through the 1990s, a very competitive environment in which similar companies, if you look at 1980s, early 1980s, there were many conglomerates in the U.S. economy. Almost none of them survived. I think GE is probably the only one that survived and certainly the only one that thrived. Most of the others were broken up, were sold into pieces because they just couldn't function. Jack Welch is the only CEO I know who's managed to run a conglomerate in kind of the business environment of the last 25 years.
Well, Disney's still around. I mean, couldn't you argue that it's really the other way around? Yeah, that it's really the other way around. It wasn't that conglomerates got broken up and sold off. It's that predators came in and took pieces of them. I mean, the 1980s, I think when you said what's significant about Jack Welch is that it was the 80s, I absolutely agree with you. However, I think that the reason why GE was able to get so large was because the Reagan administration in the 80s basically stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act, allowed GE to buy out like crazy, and GE became an incredibly corrupt corporation during that time. I mean, first of all, they had all these indictments, 858 workplace safety violations from 1990 to 2001. They were involved in so many cases of fraud under Jack Welch's watch that the Pentagon's Defense Contract Management Agency created a special office solely to deal with fraud allegations against General Electric, resulting in 22 criminal convictions and $221.7 million in fines that they recovered. In their financial division, they were fined $100 million for having people who had declared bankruptcy getting money out of them, even though they weren't entitled to it, because when you declare bankruptcy, you know, that's supposed to be the end of it. GE didn't let folks know that. General Electric paid $982.9 million for 63 cases of fraud unrelated specifically to defense contractors between 1990 and 2002. They spent $31 million just in 2001 lobbying lawmakers. I mean, it really isn't this the story of exactly the problem that you folks celebrate, which is laissez-faire capitalism, absolutely unrestrained capitalism, where the big get bigger and bigger and bigger, wiping out their competitors, taking them apart, ending up taking over government and turning the rules around so that they're the only winners?
No. I wish it was a celebration of laissez-faire capitalism, but unfortunately we don't live in that kind of world. But let me start with your interpretation of the 1980s, because I think this is part of the root of the problem. Predators came in and took over companies and dismantled them because those companies were underperforming and were more valuable separate than they were as a whole. They came in because the CEOs were incompetent, because they were being paid too much, because they couldn't run these large corporations, and therefore their stock value was down significantly, which provided predators with a wonderful opportunity to make money by taking over these companies and doing something amazing, that is making them much more productive, much more efficient, creating jobs. Indeed, in the 1980s, job creation was rampant. There were many millions and millions of jobs were created in spite of all the plant shutdowns and layoffs. More jobs were created than were being shut down. So first of all, this is a period in which the so-called predators were really responsible for the creation of the phenomenal economy that we had in the 1990s.
But Yaron, you're spinning this just a little bit. I mean, Jack Welch brags in his book about how his goal was to lay off 10% of his workers every year.
There's nothing wrong with laying off 10% of your workers every year if what you're creating is increased efficiency, increased wealth, and therefore the opportunity to create many, many more jobs somewhere else. Take the 1980s.
The current chairman of GE.
What happened in the 1980s is we shut down factories in the Midwest. We you know, shut down, we eliminated jobs in the Rust Belt, but what else happened? That capital that was freed up shifted to the Southwest, primarily to Silicon Valley, and thousands of so-called service jobs were created in Silicon Valley. What kind of service job? Jobs of Cisco jobs and software writing jobs and jobs in technology, which are much better paying, much better jobs than the jobs that were the so-called destroyed in the Rust Belt.
And they're all going to India now.
What you saw in the 1980s was a massive capital shift from old industry to new industry, from less productive activity to more productive activity, from wealth destruction to wealth creation. That's what the 1980s were about, not because of Ronald Reagan, but because of capitalism, because of the last remnants of capitalism we still have in this country.
Then, Yaron, why is
far
it?
From laissez-faire.
Why is it, then, that the average wage of workers from the mid-30s all the way up to Ronald Reagan's presidency was consistently and steadily increasing, and ever since Reagan became president and these policies went into place and the mergers and acquisitions explosion happened, they've been steadily declining? Can you stick around after the break and answer that question?
Sure.
Okay, great. We've got to take a break here, but I will give you full opportunity. I would love to hear the answer. 20 minutes past the hour, we're talking with Yaron Brook. He's the president and executive director of the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. Folks who follow the writings and thoughts of Ayn Rand. 20 minutes past the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush Show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
And now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got to get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time.
Uh-oh.
All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis. poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Forces of the world unite, let us save the day.
Ah, yes.
Malcontents without 5 cents want us to cut our pay.
Oh, dear, those nasty workers.
We only make 500 times as much as our average worker drones. We work just as hard and we too sometimes need to paint our homes.
And welcome back. We're bosses of the world unite. A great bit of theme music there, Yaron. Yaron, you were going to explain to us why the average income of the middle class has been falling ever since Reagan, and yet these are the best of times.
Sure. Well, I don't have the full statistics in front of me, so I can't comment specifically. But let me just say that, you know, we've created tens of millions of jobs in this country since the beginning of the 80s off of an economy that was doing horribly in the late 1970s. We forget the stagflation of a huge unemployment and inflation of the late 1970s. That is a thing of the past. Unemployment is at historical lows even today with the, you know, relatively poor performance I think the Bush administration has had over the last 4 years economically. So I think we've created many jobs. Now, in addition, yes, in certain sectors, wages have probably gone down or at least stayed constant over the last 20 years. And what's happened is many of those jobs have shifted overseas because wages are even lower over there. But at the same time, we've created very high-paying jobs. And what we're seeing is a truncated distribution where highly educated, highly skilled workers, I think, make a lot more than they did 20, 30 years ago. And at the low end, wages have probably declined because there's immigration, there's options overseas. There's a lot more pressure on those wages. So economically,
so the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. And that's what happens.
To an extent, that's true.
Yeah, and that's what happens in an unregulated economy.
Moving into a technological age in which knowledge, in which education is far more valuable than it was in the past.
So what's wrong with our government, for example, saying, okay, it's fine if Barry Bonds makes millions of dollars a year. You know, there's a limited market. He's very talented. And no matter what he does, it's not going to cost me my job or my pension. Not that I have a pension, but you know, no matter what he does, it's not going to wipe people out. Okay, but on the other hand, we the people, our elected representatives, got together, and this was, I don't know, 15 years ago or so, 10, 15 years ago, and it must have been during the first year of the Clinton administration, as I recall, and said, you know, if a corporation wants to pay CEO a whole bunch of money, we can't stop that. But we're not going to make a tax deductible to the corporation over $1 million. In other words, they wanted to discourage corporations from giving CEOs huge amounts of money. So then, you know, corporations just figured ways around this. You've got corporations with their own, the board that's determining how much they get paid, being, you know, old buddies of the CEO. It's almost like an organized crime family, it seems to me. Why is this a good thing?
It seems just bizarre to me. You guys see the world upside down. I mean, Barry Bonds creates no jobs. The CEOs of America create millions of jobs every day. Government creates no jobs. All the jobs in America that exist today, including your job, are caused because of the wealth and the success of American corporations. And not to reward the most productive, the people who are most beneficial to all of us, including to labor, it just seems to be incredibly unjust. Of all the people who should get a tax deduction for their wages, of all the people who should get huge salaries, CEOs seem to be the most deserving.
But it's labor that's doing the work, not, you know, they're the ones who are producing the...
That is not true. The labor comes into existence because you have a manager, because you have a CEO who...
Oh, come on, Yaron, come on. Are you saying if I stand outside and say, hi, I'm a manager, therefore suddenly you all have jobs? No.
No, I don't... I've never seen workers get together spontaneously to build an automobile. That's just not how production happens.
No, but the point is that the only reason companies...
An entrepreneur and a CEO who raise capital and find labor and create a product.
But the only reason people hire...
Because of labor.
I'll give you the last word on that.
We'll continue some other time.
Well, yeah, we'll carry this conversation on in the future. I really enjoy these. I thank you so much for being with us. Yaron Brook, the president and executive director of the Ayn Rand Institute, Ayn Rand, AYNRAND.org. Thanks a lot, Yaron. It's 29 minutes past the hour.
NBC Tonight. Joey's got a new Valentine, whether he likes it or not.
Why'd have to be so charming to the opposite sex?
And it's Valentine's Day for Will and Grace. And special guest, Ed Burns.
Might be my last chance at happiness.
Might be, definitely is.
Followed by another Apprentice First. What could bring both groups into the boardroom?
Nothing like this has ever happened before.
Then on ER, it's an all-out brawl.
Oh, my God.
Call security.
Joey, Will and Grace, The Apprentice and ER, all new NBC Tonight.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Walmart has agreed to pay more than $134,000 to settle charges alleging that it broke child labor laws. 24 violations were charged against the world's largest retailer, including allegations it had teenagers use paper balers and forklifts. According to U.S. child labor law, anyone under the age of 18 is prohibited from using hazardous equipment. The store denied the allegations, but agreed to pay the penalties anyway.
The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra has been locked out by management for more than 6 weeks, but new talks are set for Wednesday. Jan Gippo is a spokesperson for the Musicians Union. He says St. Louis orchestra musicians are paid $15,000 a year less than orchestras in similar cities.
If we accept what he's offering, this orchestra will leave the one percentile of great symphony orchestras in the world and fall to 19th and become a revolving door orchestra where the young players will leave.
Gippo says management took away prepaid health insurance from locked out musicians in St. Louis.
Canceling our health insurance is, in labor terms, is a very adversarial position to take, very combative. If we didn't take that position, and he locked us out by 7 o'clock on Monday morning, long before we were going to take a vote, before the orchestra got the proposal to take a vote, he'd locked the door. That's why it's a lockout.
The union musicians are willing to take $10,000 a year less than peers in similar cities, but they say quality of the orchestra is now the main issue.
Hundreds of workers at Garlock Sealing Technologies in New York left their jobs and hit the picket lines on Sunday. After overwhelmingly rejecting the latest contract offer on Saturday, employees represented by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers voted to strike. Union representatives say the contract would have reduced pay and allow the company to change the schedules of workers every 2 weeks. The gasket and sealing product company had asked for $3 million in concessions from the union in an attempt to remain competitive. Company spokesmen have said that the plant may have to close if demands are not met. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The number of gays and lesbians being discharged from the military has dropped significantly since September 11, 2001. According to new numbers released by the Defense Department, the number of discharges under the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy is nearly half of what it was at that time. All military branches have seen drops in discharges. Across the board, the number kicked out in 2001 was 1,227. In 2004, it was 653.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Cowboy gunslinger riding on the range. I'm right educated and I can't affect any change.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not the Heritage Foundation or Jeff Gannon. Welcome back to the program. See, what it's about is building empire. That's what's happening in America right now, is we are seeing the growth of empire. We're going back to the times of Dickens. We're going back to even before that, to feudal times, F-E-U-D-A-L, when you had a small number of very wealthy landowners. Back then, land was wealth. They didn't have factories. Now it would be factory owners or business owners who basically own the lives of everybody else. You know, in third world countries, they call them oligarchies, you know, oligarchical families. Anyhow, let's take a few phone calls on this. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Perry, a trucker on the road. Hey, Perry, welcome to the program.
How you doing, sir?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you, Perry?
I'm doing all right. Well, I got to admit to you, I'm a Republican, but I've been listening to your show for about 3 months now.
Mm-hmm.
And you're turning me over to the Democrat side.
Uh-oh. Well, yeah. I'm not a Democrat, Perry, so I'm not sure if that's a good thing.
I'm turning over to the Democrat, you know, independent kind of,
yeah.
You know, I don't agree with. See, I'm a disabled veteran. I fought in the first Gulf War, and then I fought Bosnia and Somalia.
Mm-hmm.
And I got shot up pretty bad over in Somalia, and then I ended my military career in the Marine Corps. But I don't agree with the war. I don't agree with the loss that we're having.
Yeah.
My main thing, what I wanted to say, too, was driving a truck, I go and pick up a lot of, you know, foreign stuff, like jeans and T-shirts and hats. I noticed one thing here about a year ago. I went to go pick up a load of jeans down in Texas, and these jeans came from Mexico. They had women, of course, they're all Mexicans, working in a very hot warehouse. They were cutting out Made in Mexico and putting Made in America on jeans.
You're kidding. You saw this?
I saw it. I physically saw it. And I asked them about it, and I was ushered out the door. I was told not to come back to that facility by my company that I drive for. And I took the issue up, and I was literally fired by the company that I was driving for at the time.
Amazing. Well, Perry, I have to say, for your integrity and your willingness to speak the truth, that I want, you're our jolly good fellow for the day. It's congratulations. We caught you doing something right. So anyhow, you moved along from there, what's your take here on these rising empires that are happening,
empires?
You know, largely outside these corporations that have no loyalty to the United States. It's like what you just described.
It's the CEOs trying to get richer. They're going over to like China, and they can work somebody for 50 cents a day when someone over here wants $12 a day. It's just the corporation want more money.
Yeah, it's a world apart. We are really becoming a two-class, not that we haven't always been to some extent a two-class society, but it is becoming so obvious, and the differences are becoming so great.
And can I say something real quick, and I'll let you go there about Social Security?
Sure.
I get a disability check. I get 67% disability. I make about $800 a month.
Uh-huh.
Now, I served my country. I got shot up for my country. I spent 6 months in the hospital. I had to learn how to walk again. It took me a year to learn how to walk again.
Wow.
And you know they tax that money?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah. They take Social Security. So I'm paying double Social Security. I'm an owner-operator, own my own truck. I'm paying Social Security out of my paycheck that I get from the company that I'm driving for. And then when I get my government check every month, they take Social Security and taxes out of that.
I know.
I'm paying double Social Security.
I know. I think it's wrong. I think it's absolutely wrong. And, in fact, I should go back and check out when that happened and who put that into place, because I know it didn't used to be that way. From the beginning, Social Security was not taxed, and I'm not sure, frankly, when they started taxing it.
Can I ask your personal opinion? What do you think of the war, sir?
Of the war in Iraq?
Yes, sir.
I think that it was a campaign stunt that Karl Rove came up with in 2000. Bob Woodward basically talks about it in his book. He went down to Texas and said, no sitting president during time of war has ever failed to get reelected. We need to make you a war president. And you know, we've a bunch of guys around you have been wanting to go after Iraq since 98. Let's do it.
Do you think it was redemption for his daddy pulling back?
I think there's some, you know, the psychological thing and all that. Those are like side benefits, I think. He gets to show that he's more powerful than his dad because he was always, I mean, one time he tried to pick a fist fight with his father. There was always a lot of tension between these two.
We were within 50 miles of Baghdad when the president ordered us to fall back and not, we were ready to assault Baghdad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and we were told to pull back.
I honestly
think that this is redemption for what his daddy didn't get to do.
Yeah.
And I think he's using 9/11 as a thing. Because I was in the Marine Corps, I was a chemical war specialist.
Mm-hmm.
My job was to find and destroy chemical weapons.
Right.
We never found a lick of chemical weapons when we were over there the first time. And I got a brother that's still in the Marine Corps. He does the same job I did. And he never, ever, they've never found a lick of chemical weapons over there.
Yeah.
I think that it was BS that he even went over there for that, and now he's stuck.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he expected it to go this badly. I think he thought he was going to have a quick victory, and he was going to be the war president, and he would be invincible, and no Democrat could beat him, and blah, blah, blah. And instead, guess what? The lessons of history caught up with him. But, Perry, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear
all
from
right,
you
sure.
And good points you make, and thank you for the fine service you gave to your country and for having the courage to stand up and speak out when you see fraud happening. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Tom in St. Paul, Minnesota on the line. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I've called a couple times your show, and just to tell that truck driver, I was also fooled when I was in the Army, and I voted for Reagan, and I regret that. Because all they had was Limbaugh on the radio on the Armed Forces Network.
That's but still all they have on the Armed Forces Network.
Exactly. So they have, that voice that hoodwinks a lot of the Army guys. But I've, of course, seen the light and have come over to the good guys. And all he has to remember, again, is that the GOP values property over people, and all their ideology flows from that belief.
Yeah.
And, this Ayn Rand guy wanted to comment about how they see the world upside down. Just a little reminder of Reagan and all your listeners, he created an artificial prosperity on a credit card. If you give me a credit card, I could do that too.
Oh, we're paying $160 billion this year
right.
in interest payments on the money that Ronald Reagan borrowed in the early 80s so that in 84, when he ran for reelection, it would look like we had a good economy.
Yeah, we went from the largest, I was just reading again in my history books here, largest lender nation to the largest debtor nation under Reagan.
That's right.
And he was the first to hit, a trillion with a T?
That's right. It was about 800, 900 billion before he came in. We'd never hit a trillion, and it was, two or three trillion by the time he left, him and Bush. It's
right. I mean, what are these Ayn Rand, what is this? They have this blind...
In defense of Yaron Brook and the Ayn Rand folks, the objectivists, I don't think that they would agree with that kind of stuff either. I mean, frankly, they believe. I don't want to try and characterize their belief.
Well, he was defending Reagan as being this time of prosperity, which was on a credit card.
Yeah, well, that's because really what he was defending was the fact that Reagan was suspending the Sherman Antitrust Act, was letting corporations letting the big get bigger and less restraint of corporate activity.
But aren't they supply siders, these guys?
Whatever that means.
Well, because they think they believe that supply is before demand. Of course, it's the reverse.
I know. It's like I was baffled when he said you have managers, therefore you have employees. I mean, the whole point of having an employee, if I'm going to hire somebody,
right.
And I'm going to pay them, say, $10 an hour, I'm going to hire them because they're going to earn me $12 an hour. That's the only reason as an employer you ever hire an employee is because they can produce for you more money than they cost you.
Yeah, he acts like they're so generous. They just want to hire workers to be generous.
Well, and this is the thing. In the last 20 years, and there really has been this change, Tom. There really has been this change. 20 years ago, everybody in this country understood that it is the workers who produce in this country and that workers produce profits, and that the reason why companies hire people is because those people will make them, that will make the corporation, that will make the company more money than the workers cost them. I mean, everybody just understood that. And for the last 20 years, largely since Reagan and since this giant right-wing propaganda operation mm-hmm. has swung into business with mm-hmm. billions of dollars, Now the average American, particularly the average American under 30 or under 35, who has no recollection of what it was like back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, thinks that when that these folks are giving us jobs.
Right.
They're not giving us jobs. They're giving us an opportunity for us to make them more profit.
And how they've succeeded over the last 20 years is by confusing, again, like I've said before, democracy and capitalism, and not realizing that capitalism is subordinate to democracy. It's not equal.
Yeah. Yeah, capitalism is an economic system. Democracy is a political system. And you know, try telling that to any high school graduate these days. They just don't get it. Tom, I got to move along. I appreciate the call, though.
Yeah,
thank you. It's just incredible. Skip in Tucson, Arizona, on the line. Hey, Skip, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. I don't know. I got a flood of things come to my mind when after hearing that guy from the
from Ayn Rand Institute.
Yeah. That guy right there. Anyway, I was. Sort of reminded me, first of all, of this book called Barbarians to Bureaucrats, where they describe a bell curve of the life of a cult of a company. And, you know, this got written by a capitalist, and the guy talks about the very the death cycle of, or the very end of the bell curve, and that's described as the aristocratic stage, where the CEOs and all the leaders of the company are so far removed that they make all these decisions like buyouts and stuff like that, but, and they contribute nothing. You know, they contribute, they have absolutely no creative sense over their own, so they just look at their little bottom lines. But, I've worked in the aerospace companies. I've seen this, too. The higher-level managers would just hire managers below them that would just be even more stupid than they are, and they produce nothing other than just consume a lot of money and make stupid decisions. And I remember a story from the old digital company that when the Alpha chip was created by digital, that was done by a group of engineers that just went off secretly on their own. They didn't tell any manager at all anything until they went off and finally designed this entire computer chip.
Right.
And when they finally got far enough where they could actually start producing, well, then they finally started letting the bureaucrats in, and that was the only way they could actually design something that was, was really
quality. Well, in truth, it varies from company to company. There are some very good managers, and management is a necessary part of running a business. But again, a manager should only be in a business if they're generating more profit than they're costing. I mean, they're technically employees as well. But no, enough said on that. I think that's
the point. Well, the one aerospace company I worked for, its stock value dropped about 60%, and the CEO still made $70 million that year.
Yeah, well, that's the organized crime thing. Is that these salary boards, the group that decides the CEO's pay, are very often put together by the CEOs. They don't represent the shareholders. They're separate. Very often. I mean, there are attempts to reform this, but these are things that the quote free market end quote folks would be totally opposed to. They'd say, you know, no, don't be messing with that. And there is a certain amount of, you know, Dilbert in the American workforce. Back when I used to own an ad agency down in Atlanta, one of our clients was a Fortune 500 corporation, and I was working with one of the senior vice presidents there. And I remember one time we were having lunch, and he made a comment to me that just absolutely stunned me. He said that he would never hire anybody who was more competent than him, except his secretary. He wanted to have a brilliant secretary because she, in this case, could make him look good. But he never wanted to have a subordinate employee who was smarter than him or more competent than him, because then his job would be at risk. And I thought, how can a company survive over the long term like this? And yet this is a very prosperous company. It still is. Still is. It's still out there. It's still one of the Fortune 500 companies. So there is that mentality among some people, but you know, but I think the larger issue here is, what kind of society do we want to live in? Do we want to live in a society that has a strong middle class or not? And Jefferson and the founders were very clear that without a strong middle class, you can't have democracy, and that to have a strong middle class, you have to either give labor equal power with management, which is repealing Taft-Hartley, the 1947 Taft-Hartley Act, and going back to the Wagner Act, and giving the absolute right to form unions easily everywhere, and some enforcement mechanism for that. Or you have to heavily regulate business activity in such a way that corporations don't grow so large that they dominate markets, that they wipe out, that they eliminate competition. Not they just they wipe out their competitors, but there is no more competition. There is no more free enterprise. There's just monopolies. And those folks who have tried to get a bill paid by their health insurance company recently, or tried to deal with the bureaucracy at a phone company, you think the DMV is bad? Corporate America is worse. Anyhow, got to move along. Skip, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. Good to hear from you. John in Georgia's on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. How are you?
I'm great. What's up?
I was listening to your show, and I just want to make a couple of comments from the previous caller.
Okay, we have about a minute, John.
Okay, all right. Well, I picked up products that came off a container ship that came out of China. We took them. I'm a truck driver, also owner-operator.
Mm-hmm.
I took them up to Chattanooga, Tennessee, and they came off the production line as bulldozers made in America. It doesn't matter what company it was.
In other words, they just slapped something onto them,
yeah,
and all of a sudden...
Made in America.
Yeah, it's like Dell Computers. You know, they say they've got a factory here, but they're really assembling.
Right, exactly. And the other quick point is for that owner-operator. I'm an owner-operator, too. And if he's paying double Social Security, he's still got to pay it on his... disability check, but if his company shows he doesn't have to pay Social Security weekly or by every time he gets it, he can pay Social Security either quarterly or he can pay it at the end of the year. And if his company loses money, which all owner-operators are pretty much doing with the price of diesel fuel, he doesn't have to pay Social Security if his business loses money.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. Well, I hope he's still listening. Skip, thanks a lot for the call. Or John, rather. We've got to move. We've got to move along. 10 minutes before the hour.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
In some parts of the world, a shortage of protein leads to an abundance of poaching. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio.
People and wildlife are suffering from severe overfishing in the waters of West Africa. Researchers say the fishery has been depleted as a result of overexploitation, and people can no longer rely on fish to get cheap protein into their diets. People are turning to animal meat as a replacement, and they're getting it by poaching in wildlife reserves. Justin Precheres is a wildlife ecologist at the University of California in Berkeley. He studied the rise and fall of fish populations off the coast of Ghana during the past 30 years. Ghana is on Africa's Atlantic coast, and people there have depended on fish for generations. Precheres says the importance of this fishery stretches from the Atlantic coast to the edge of the Sahara Desert.
It's actually when you get much further inland, in some cases even into sub-desert or desert communities, hundreds, in some cases 1,000 miles from the coast, where you realize that it's these smoked or dried fish, particularly these small sardines and anchovy-type things, that are the primary source of animal protein. And they're the cheapest. They're still, despite the cost of getting these fish transported all the way out to these villages in the middle of nowhere, they're still the cheapest source of animal protein around.
Precheres says this source of protein and economic livelihood is disappearing because of overfishing. He says people all over West Africa are now hunting in game reserves to get protein from meat. His work shows that hunting has been hard on herds of wild animals that include elephants, lions, and leopards. Precheres published his findings last November in the journal Science. He says these problems occur around the world, and we need to find new ways to give people cheap protein that doesn't come from fish or other animals in the wild. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you today by DemocraticMatch.com and Small Dog Electronics, SmallDog.com. DemocraticMatch.com, SmallDog.com, our sponsors. If you like the program, please support our sponsors and the sponsors that you hear on your local radio station as well. Be sure to let them know you heard them on the Tom Hartman Program. On the day before Enron declared bankruptcy, bonus checks for more than $55 million. $55 million. The day before they declared bankruptcy, they wrote $55 million worth of bonus checks to the senior executives, on top of another $50 million in bonuses that have been paid just a few weeks earlier. Tell me this isn't organized crime. And you say, well, okay, well, that's Enron. We'll take care of them. Yeah, maybe one or two people. Well, they got Jeff Skilling and his wife now. And maybe Kenny Boy Lay, maybe not. It is the system, my friends. It is broken. It is broken. We have turned the hen house over to the foxes. And that is the official policy of this administration. The official policy. And increasingly, that's how our economy is going. It's the imperative: internalize profits, externalize costs. If you can figure out a way to get the taxpayers to pay your costs, you get to keep more of the profits. For example, this from AFL-CIO.org, the AFL-CIO, Walmart's cost to taxpayers at a glance. Each Walmart store employing 200 people costs taxpayers, this being the local taxpayers largely, approximately $420,750 a year in public social services used by Walmart workers whose low wages and unaffordable health insurance mean most of them are among the working poor. $36,000 for free and reduced school lunches, $42,000 for Section 8 federal housing, $125,000 for federal tax credits and deductions for low-income families, $100,000 for Title I education funds, Based on 50 qualifying Walmart families and an average of two children, and $9,750 for energy assistance subsidies for low-income families. So you pay your taxes so Walmart can make a profit, so the Walton family can sit on their butts by the pool waiting for the dividend checks to arrive in the mail, and then only pay 15% income tax because it came from investment income rather than labor. This George W. Bush's most recent tax cut. Amazing. Amazing. Wake up, America.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Walmart has agreed to pay more than $134,000 to settle charges alleging that it broke child labor laws. 24 violations were charged against the world's largest retailer, including allegations it had teenagers use paper balers and forklifts. According to U.S. child labor law, anyone under the age of 18 is prohibited from using hazardous equipment. The store denied the allegations, but agreed to pay the penalties anyway.
The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra has been locked out by management for more than 6 weeks, but new talks are set for Wednesday. Jan Gippo is a spokesperson for the Musicians Union. He says St. Louis orchestra musicians are paid $15,000 a year less than orchestras in similar cities.
If we accept what he's offering, this orchestra will leave the one percentile of great symphony orchestras in the world and fall to 19th and become a revolving door orchestra where the young players will leave.
Gippo says management took away prepaid health insurance from locked-out musicians in St. Louis.
Canceling our health insurance is, in labor terms, is a very adversarial position to take, very combative. If we didn't take that position and he locked us out by 7 o'clock on Monday morning, long before we were going to take a vote, before the orchestra got the proposal to take a vote, he'd lock the door. That's why it's a lockout.
The union musicians are willing to take $10,000 a year less than peers in similar cities, but they say quality of the orchestra is now the main issue.
Hundreds of workers at Garlock Sealing Technologies in New York left their jobs and hit the picket lines on Sunday. After overwhelmingly rejecting the latest contract offer on Saturday, employees represented by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers voted to strike. Union representatives say the contract would have reduced pay and allow the company to change the schedules of workers every 2 weeks. The gasket and sealing product company had asked for $3 million in concessions from the union in an attempt to remain competitive. Company spokesmen have said that the plant may have to close if demands are not met. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The number of gays and lesbians being discharged from the military has dropped significantly since September 11, 2001. According to new numbers released by the Defense Department, the number of discharges under the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy is nearly half of what it was at that time. All military branches have seen drops in discharges. Across the board, the number kicked out in 2001 was 1,227. In 2004, it was 653.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
George W., inhaling the fumes of his own hubris, has been claiming that he not only won the presidential election, but also won a mandate for his policies, including his war in Iraq and his plan to undo our Social Security program. We had an accountability moment, and that's called the 2004 elections, Bush recently smirked to reporters. Interesting if true, but it's not. Sorry to pop that little bubble your handlers keep you in, George, but polls now show that you're starting your second term with no mandate, with strong disapproval of your policies in Iraq, and with the public dubious about your leadership on the domestic front. In fact, your job approval rating is an embarrassingly low 49%. Contrast that to the 60% approval for Clinton and 62% for Reagan when they began their second terms. Only Richard Nixon started his second term with a lower job approval rating than you. One key measure of presidential performance is the public's sense of whether America is on the right track. Bad news again. 56% say the country is on the wrong track, the worst rating for Bush since he's been in office. His war? 58% disapprove of his handling of it. 75% say he has no credible exit strategy. A majority says George routinely exaggerates about conditions there, and 53% say his war will not be worth the loss of American lives. On his number one domestic issue, privatizing Social Security, 55% disapprove, rising to 70% when people learn that his plan will cut benefits by a third. This is Jim Hightower saying, George might have won the popularity contest last fall, but his policies are unpopular. This is no time for Democrats in Congress to cave in, wailing that Bush is too popular to oppose. Buck up, buckos. People want you to fight this elitist, extremist regime.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, our strikes, as in labor strikes, are strikes civil contributions or criminal disturbances? For a lot of the history of certainly the industrial age, labor strikes have been viewed as criminal behavior. During the Lincoln administration, the word strikes, it was such a novel thing, the word strikes in newspapers was put in quotation marks. Although Abraham Lincoln did say, labor is superior to capital because labor precedes capital. In other words, you can't have money until somebody makes something, and that somebody making that something, that's labor. David Swanson is the media coordinator for the International Labor Communications Association, board member for Progressive Democrats of America. You can find out more information at ILCA, as in International Labor Communications Association, ILCAonline.org. ILCAonline. Online is part of the name of it, ilcaonline.org. His website. David, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you here. This is a fascinating piece you've written, and increasingly, let's just start out with what's the state of labor right now? I noticed on the site Labor Start, LABOUR Start. It's presumably an internet where trade unionists start their day on the net. Labor news from the USA. Just for today, there's like a dozen different headlines about labor activities around the country. We run labor news, on this program, at least during the local minutes and during the breaks and the news at the top of the hour. Not all of our stations carry it. Some of them do. We carry labor news in this program. I talk about these labor issues regularly, but I haven't heard, NBC, Evening News, CBS, I haven't heard a labor story in, it seems, years. What's going on?
Well, you're not alone. There aren't that many to hear, and the few that you do hear are pretty misleading and distorting. There are a lot of good websites and radio shows out there, including yours and including the ILCA website has dozens of articles every day, most produced by labor union papers and magazines. So it's a different point of view. The state of labor, it continues to be a significant advantage to be a union member. That, pay is 25% higher, benefits in terms of health care significantly higher. Just about the only people who have, defined benefit pensions are labor members. You have more rights in the workplace, more vacation, et cetera. It's significantly advantageous. And there's some 50 million Americans who would like to be in a labor union and aren't. But the size of the labor movement continues to shrink. It's down to under 13% and falling, despite all of our efforts.
Yeah, and about 4% of that is the federal and state. Those are government employees. So the private workforce is around 8 or 9%, isn't it?
That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
And the public unionized workforce is under significant attack right now from the Bush administration, which is putting out new standards for the employment of workers in the federal government.
Well, Bush has said he wants to bust out 800,000 government employees. He wants to replace 800,000 unionized government employees with people working for private companies that are Republican donors, presumably.
Yeah, he is attacking the labor movement in every way, shape, and form conceivable, and that includes the recent actions of the National Labor Relations Board with 3 out of 5 appointees from Bush. They have taken endless steps to take away unionizing rights from various categories of workers, from grad students, from temp workers, et cetera. And they're looking at taking away card check organizing, which, as is a bill in Congress from a Republican. Yeah. And
now, let's explain that, because I have a feeling most people don't know what card check organizing is.
Well, one of the main reasons that there are fewer union members in the country than there would be, that there are tens of millions who want to join a union and can't, is that it's very hard to create a union in the first place. One way that you can do it is through an election, a National Labor Relations Board election. But this process has become unworkable. It's to the point where it takes years to get an election, years after that to find out the results, years after that to get a first contract. If then, people are gone, people are turned over, and people are fired. In a huge percentage of cases, members who support starting a union are fired. Others are discriminated against, transferred to an isolated workplace. All employees are taken to mandatory anti-union meetings, one-on-one anti-union meetings with your supervisor. It's far from a fair electoral process.
So basically, it only really works in those environments where the management itself is not just willing to have a union, but perhaps even enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, because there are so many legal steps they can take to block it and delay it.
And yet, if
and
I want to
so
start
many steps.
Well,
sorry, I was going to say there's so many other steps they can take that are technically illegal,
right,
but involve a slap on the wrist so that it's profitable for them to do it, such as firing workers.
Yeah. And yet, if you want to start a corporation, you can do that in an afternoon. If, I mean,
that's literally right.
If you want to start a business, you go down to the Secretary of State and you say, hey, I've got some capital here. I've got $5. I've got $5 million, whatever it may be. I want to start a corporation. The name of the corporation is, Joe's Widgets Incorporated. And you pay your $375 or whatever it is in the state you happen to be in. I think that's what it is here in Vermont. And they give you your papers and you apply. You can now get your federal employer ID number online. You can get that in 15 minutes. I mean, by the end of the afternoon, you have brought into being a corporation, a company, a business. And yet to bring a union into being can take years. What's wrong with this picture?
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. And you asked about card check. The other way, one of the other ways you can form a union is through card check, where you get 50% plus one of the relevant workers to sign a piece of paper saying they want a union. And rather than all in one election, you get that individually. And then,
so sort of like getting a petition,
permission of the employer voluntarily to accept that. It's voluntary. Well, it may become illegal, so that even a company that wants to accept card check organizing can't. And so you're going to see basically the formal process of forming a union removed, or so narrowly constricted that really all that's left is for workers to stage public demonstrations, pickets, protest, corner their manager in the office and chant and demand to get a union.
Yeah.
Because the formal steps are being taken away.
Now here's what is boggling my mind, David. We're talking with David Swanson. He's the media coordinator for the International Labor Communications Association, the ILCA, and a board member of the Progressive Democrats of America. Their website, the ILCA's website, is ilcaonline.org, www.ilcaonline.org. David, when Reagan came into office, about a quarter of the American workforce was unionized. And conventional wisdom is that for every union job, there's another job that has very similar benefits because of just, competition in the workplace, in the marketplace. I think the peak of unionization in the United States was around 1947 when Taft-Hartley was passed at 35%, which meant that about 70% of Americans had a job where a single person could bring home a salary, they could put their kids through college, buy a house, have the middle class American dream, right? The life insurance, a pension, good retirement, the vacations, just the basic stuff. Reagan came into office, it was 25%, which meant about half of Americans had that. And it, unfortunately, it's mostly, old farts like me who remember those times, who remember the 60s and the 70s when the times before that, even when one person working in a family could raise a family and setting aside the whole value thing about, whether or not we should have, two people working or whether women should be in the working, blah, 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 blah. But I mean, just the raw economic reality of it, that one person could raise a family on a paycheck. And Reagan declared war on organized labor, and now we're down to 8 or 9% of the private workforce. And these cons for the last 25 years have been very successful on a state-by-state basis, on a local basis, and at a federal level, particularly during the Reagan and now the George W. Bush administrations, with the National Labor Relations Board stacking them with which is supposed to defend the interests of labor, stacking them with people who hate the interests of labor. They've been very successful in devastating the labor union. Yet the labor union movement is the strongest bulwark. It's the strongest element. It's the strongest leg of the table, whatever metaphor you want to use, to create and maintain a middle class in America. Why? Why? And for goodness sake, why would these people be so opposed to there being a strong middle class in America?
Well, you can argue that they're short-sighted, and I believe they are. I mean, the sort of benefits to the economy and to everyone in this country that you see from a strong labor movement are well documented. But if your interests are only the very, very wealthiest in the country, and That's who you know. That's who you associate with, the haves and the have-mores, your base. Then you're not interested in that. You're not interested in what's going to avoid economic disaster. You're not interested in what's going to build an educated and reliable and dependable workforce that is healthy and gets enough sleep at night. You're interested in short-term profits and
building your own empires.
Right. And one way that you make short-term profits, the low road to it is to exploit your workers, to pay them as little as possible, as few benefits as possible, as few rights as possible. There are corporate leaders in this country who see a different way, who prefer to have a workforce with high morale and high health and getting sleep at night, and they see benefits from that. But you know,
but they're few and far between. David, we've only got about 30 seconds left. What can people do? What's the call for action here? What would you like our listeners to do to help the labor movement in the United States?
You should support labor-friendly media, including the Tom Hartman Show, including organizations of labor media like the ILCA, ilcaonline.org. You should get involved in the unprecedented public debate now going on within the labor movement over its future, over what it should become. You should go to the AFL-CIO's website, to the ILCA's website, and to the Unite to Win website established by the Service Employees Union, and get involved in the debates and tell the labor movement that it needs to be a social movement working for all workers.
Yeah. They need to get their act together. And, if I may add, respectfully, contact your congressman and your senator and say, we want labor in America. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
NBC Tonight. Joey's got a new Valentine, whether he likes it or not.
Why'd have to be so charming to the opposite sex?
And it's Valentine's Day for Will and Grace. And special guest, Ed Burns.
Might be my last chance at happiness.
Might be, definitely is.
Followed by another Apprentice First. What could bring both groups into the boardroom?
Nothing like this has ever happened before.
Then on ER, it's an all-out brawl.
Oh, my God.
Call security.
Joey, Will and Grace, The Apprentice and ER, all new NBC Tonight.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
I hate Walmart. If you didn't hear the story, well, here's how it is. Big companies sell below cost, drive mom and pop out of business. Pretty soon all over the land, one big square store, identical brand, and that's why I hate Walmart.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-889-8894, and it is 25 minutes. Well, I already said that. I guess I did it. Anyhow, it's time for our daily report from Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C. Ellen Ratner with us. Hey, Ellen.
Hey, how you doing? Well, I'll tell you, Tom, I spent Saturday at the Democrats and watched our friend Howard Dean give the speech and also his press conference.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, he is saying that he is going to spend his energy, I think I may have even told you this on Friday, on the red states,
right,
and particularly in the South and the West,
yeah.
That the Democrats are saying had they gotten only a few counties, they would have won the election in terms of the electoral vote.
Yeah, and when you look nationwide, it's something like fewer than 200,000 votes. If they had strategically, if only 200,000 votes had changed nationwide, we would have control of the House and Senate as well.
Right.
I mean, it's just amazing.
Essentially, the Democrats are saying is they're aware of that. They know what they need to do. And what Howard, it's interesting, my friend Deborah Oren, who is from the New York Post, she's the White House correspondent, said that she got a lot of emails from Republicans saying that they thought Howard Dean's speech was really not a very good speech, that he didn't have passion. I disagree with that, by the way, and that he was too partisan. Excuse me, he's chairman of the Democratic National Committee. He's not going to give a kumbaya speech.
There's a reason why they're afraid of him, Ellen. There's a reason why there was only one Democrat among all of the Democratic hopefuls who were in the primaries that the Republicans bothered to spend $1 million on negative advertising to blow out of the water, and that was Howard Dean.
That's right, the sushi-eating, latte-drinking...
Right, exactly. Steve Moore...
Club for Growth.
Yep,
ad.
Steve Moore coming with $1 million they came in to take down Howard Dean. And I'm convinced it's because they knew that if Howard Dean won that Iowa caucus and went on to be the guy who went up against George W. Bush, he would have beat the pants off Bush. And the Republicans weren't
totally
going to allow that
agree.
To happen. Yeah.
The other thing is of course, the White House is in town this week. The president's in town. He's going to submit his supplemental money today, so we'll see exactly how he intends to spend that $80 or so billion. And the other thing is that the president, when Gonzalez was sworn in this morning, called for a renewal of the Patriot Act, and then he talked about the up or down vote on judicial nominees.
Yeah, of course. One of the things that I'm curious about, Ellen, we had this last week, this report that came out that said that there were over 52, as I recall, 52 reports that you know, made it up through the system from the time that George W. Bush became president until 9/11.
Yeah, I actually have a column on that today on WorldNet Daily, if you want to go to that.
Why isn't this a huge story in the media, that George W. Bush and Condi Rice let this thing happen on their watch, and they were being constantly warned about it, and then they went before the American people and lied to us, saying, oh, I could never have imagined, when they had 52 specific warnings?
Right.
So where's the outrage? Why isn't Joe Biden banging on the table someplace?
Had this been Bill Clinton, they would have been bananas.
They would be crucifying him.
That's right.
So are the Democrats just going to this is just last week's news?
Country, Tom.
We have what?
We have a liberal press.
Oh, I see. Yes.
So, of course, they're only friendly to the liberals, and they hate George Bush.
Yeah, and they're...
But somehow they're not doing their job in that direction.
Yeah, I see this as the biggest story of perhaps the year. I mean, you know, of the last 3 years.
Story that I agree with you, people are ignoring. And it was released. It wasn't part of the 9/11 report.
Yeah, and then they wanted it released before the election, and Bush said no. And then they wanted it released after the election. He said no, not until Condi's sworn in, and now we know why. You know, it showed that Condi was complicit in this thing, too. And I'm just boggled by this.
That's what we've got. We've got somebody that's just going to do George Bush's bidding.
As in terms of ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, MSNBC, etc. Well, the one exception, the Talk Radio News Service, two exceptions, and the Tom Hartman Program. Ellen, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Talk to you tomorrow. 29 minutes past the hour.
And now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got to get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time.
Uh-oh.
All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Walmart has agreed to pay more than $134,000 to settle charges alleging that it broke child labor laws. 24 violations were charged against the world's largest retailer, including allegations it had teenagers use paper balers and forklifts. According to U.S. child labor law, anyone under the age of 18 is prohibited from using hazardous equipment. The store denied the allegations, but agreed to pay the penalties anyway.
The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra has been locked out by management for more than 6 weeks, but new talks are set for Wednesday. Jan Gippo is a spokesperson for the Musicians Union. He says St. Louis orchestra musicians are paid $15,000 a year less than orchestras in similar cities.
If we accept what he's offering, this orchestra will leave the one percentile of great symphony orchestras in the world and fall to 19th and become a revolving door orchestra where the young players will leave.
Gippo says management took away prepaid health insurance from locked out musicians in St. Louis.
Canceling our health insurance is, in labor terms, is a very adversarial position to take, very combative. If we didn't take that position, and he locked us out by 7 o'clock on Monday morning, long before we were going to take a vote, before the orchestra got the proposal to take a vote, he'd locked the door. That's why it's a lockout.
The union musicians are willing to take $10,000 a year less than peers in similar cities, but they say quality of the orchestra is now the main issue.
Hundreds of workers at Garlock Sealing Technologies in New York left their jobs and hit the picket lines on Sunday. After overwhelmingly rejecting the latest contract offer on Saturday, employees represented by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers voted to strike. Union representatives say the contract would have reduced pay and allow the company to change the schedules of workers every 2 weeks. The gasket and sealing product company had asked for $3 million in concessions from the union in an attempt to remain competitive. Company spokesmen have said that the plant may have to close if demands are not met. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The number of gays and lesbians being discharged from the military has dropped significantly since September 11, 2001. According to new numbers released by the Defense Department, the number of discharges under the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy is nearly half of what it was at that time. All military branches have seen drops in discharges. Across the board, the number kicked out in 2001 was 1,227. In 2004, it was 653.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. No siree. And welcome back, my friends. Slash first, says Sue in our chat room. I'll leave it to you to figure out the meaning of that. If you're not in there, you don't know. Welcome back. Our number 1-866-889-8894, the telephone number. If you want to drop into the chat room, the URL, the website, tomhartman.com. However you spell it, I think we have all four possible misspellings. However you spell it, it'll get you there. And just click live chat, register in the message boards, and drop into the live chat room and participate in our ongoing conversation. Speaking of ongoing conversations, Ed in Shawnee, Kansas is on the line. Hey, Ed.
Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
Great. What's up?
Well, I had a couple of things, but that last item on the news at the end of the hour there at the break. About the gays being discharged from the Army going down.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think we got to hear it for Alan Keyes. I mean, Alan Keyes is a man of his convictions. His daughter came out this morning as a lesbian activist, and he promptly threw her out of the house and cut off her college education.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
I totally missed this.
Yes. Isn't this a wonderful thing?
Amazing.
Amazing. Amazing. What a dad. Anyway, going back to the labor thing, I just had, while you were talking to the fellow from the labor union, I just had this thought, you know, it's so hard to organize a labor union these days.
Yeah.
But what if labor did what capital did? What if all these people got together, threw in a few bucks, incorporated, and then went to battle using the protections that we're now giving the corporations to?
Well, that's, you know, that's my point. And in point of fact, that's more or less how it worked at one point. And then, you know, government got into the act and said, okay, we have to protect these people, because folks would do that. And then the corporate powers would hire professional goon squads, in some cases professional killers. But, you know, there were professional strike-breaking organizations. There were private police forces. Pinkerton was big into this in the early days. I mean, that was the early history of Pinkerton was to go in and smash heads, right, to bust up strikes. And you know, they're a good, reputable, honorable company now. But a lot of these companies in the private security business started out that way as anti-union companies. And so with the Wagner Act in 1935, the whole idea was if folks are going to do what you just described, Ed, then they're going to have some protections, and we're going to create a National Labor Relations Board, which is going to enforce those protections, have some power of enforcement over it. And what has happened is that over time, not only have those protections been eroded, but as a result of big bucks being spread around in Washington, D.C., laws have been changed to restrict union activity, what unions can do. And yes, there was some pretty corrupt union activity back in the 60s and 70s, you know, Jimmy Hoffa and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it did need to be aired out and cleaned out. The same with corporate activity. You know, they're just you're going to find bad apples wherever you go.
Oh, sure.
But now, as soon as you invoke the word union, there are laws that come into place that regulate who you are and what you can do as soon as you start using the word union.
Yep. So. Well, that's why I'm wondering about avoiding the word union and just becoming another aggregation, a smaller aggregation of capital, but with a lot more people in it.
Yeah, and, a corporation within a corporation. They'll just say that you're a union because those definitions. I mean, they got this thing figured out.
Yeah, sure. I know they're all smarter than I am.
If it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. You know, it's a, yeah.
Yeah,
but it's an idea. It's an idea, Ed. Ed, I appreciate it. I got to move along.
Thanks, okay, good talking to you, Tom.
Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Ken in Michigan on the line. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I'm fine. What's up?
Well, last week, President Bush proposed a bill to give the surviving families of the people that were killed and the men and women killed in Afghanistan and Iraq $100,000. That's a step in the right direction, but it's not doing anything for the families of the severely wounded. And some of those severely wounded people will be in the hospitals the rest of their life.
Right.
Because they'll never be able to go back to society.
Yeah.
And President Bush needs to provide for them the same as for the ones that are deceased.
But, see, the problem with that, and the problem with that, Ken, is that if we're going to provide benefits to those folks, we can't have tax cuts for multimillionaires. And Bush has made it very clear what his priorities are. He's going to cut back, and is look at his budget. He's going to cut back on anything that benefits anybody who makes, you know, under $50,000-$60,000 a year, and veterans. And he's going to increase the benefit. In fact, he wants to dramatically increase the tax cuts for multimillionaires. He wants to take the amount of tax that you pay if you earn your living sitting around the pool waiting for the dividend checks to show up. He wants to take the amount of tax that you pay from the current 15% maximum to zero. Zero. And,
well,
you know, that's it. Those are his priorities.
Well, I propose, and everybody I talk to, I'm urging them to call the White House switchboard number 202-224-1111 and urge the president to take care of the severely wounded families as well as the deceased.
Okay, you want to give that number again? Because I spoke over you. I thought I had the same number here. Go ahead.
202-456-1111.
Yeah, okay.
And tell the president to take care of the severely wounded families as well as the ones of the deceased.
Good one. And let me toss in the phone number for the switchboard of Congress, because you're frankly going to get more bang for your buck by speaking to a member of the staff of your member of Congress or your senator than you will. Yeah, I mean, basically calling the White House. It's like they're taking an opinion poll and they really don't care. But your member of Congress, the switchboard for Congress, no matter who your congressperson is or wherever you live, even if you don't know the name of your congressperson, they can help you out, is 202-224-3121.
224-3121. 21?
Yep.
Okay, yep. 202, right?
That's right. Washington, D.C.
Yep. I'm writing this down because I didn't have that number.
Yeah. That's a number you should call once a week. I get to talk to my congressman every week. We have Bernie on here every Friday, so he knows what I'm thinking. But from time to time, I call Pat Leahy and Jim Jeffords, and of course, you never get through to them. But I mean, you know, you talk to a member of their staff, and it's surprising actually how small most of these congressional staffs are. And word does travel, and your phone calls actually do have an impact, a significant impact. So, you know, get the word out.
202-224-3121. 224-3121.
Got it.
Okay, I'm going to, everybody I talk to, I'm a UAW member.
Good. Good on you.
From UAW, GM UAW,
mm-hmm.
GM plant.
Yep.
And I'm going to tell everybody to call this number and urge them to support the families of the severely wounded, because a lot of them are guard and reserve, and they'll never be able to leave the hospital.
Yeah.
They'll be there till they die.
Yeah, or they're going to have
a... What are the families going to do? Most of them are married and got two or three kids, and if we're going to take care of the families of the deceased, we got to take care of the families of the severely wounded, because they're in the same boat.
Yeah, Bush
They've
is...
lost their loved one, and they'll never get them back.
Yep, Bush has given us a whole world of hurt here. Ken, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Mike in Orlando, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Mike, what's up? Hey, I'm sorry, Orlando, Florida.
There you go.
Pennsylvania's next.
I wanted to disagree with you about the Iraq war, but first I wanted to just say something about Bush's budget cut.
Sure.
It said that he was cutting 154 programs because he sees them either as duplicates, failures, or inefficiencies. And it's funny how he can apply that to the programs he wants to cut, but the intelligence that he claimed failed to increase, the defense that is not increasing, and everything else.
Yeah.
So it's just
Yeah, it's can you spell hypocrite, Mike?
B-U-S-H.
Yeah, there you go. You wanted to disagree with me about the war.
Yeah, it may not be disagreeing with you, but too many times I hear you, your focal point being George Bush and, you know, referencing the Bob Woodward book about going to war.
Yeah.
But he went along with it simply because it was already in progress as far as all the workings behind it to get it started. Of course,
this war
ride
was
the coattails of it.
Yeah, this war was planned back in the late 90s, but I am convinced that the timing of this thing was just exquisitely handled. You know, the whole resolution to go to war in September of 2002 was the thing that flipped the congressional or the senatorial elections. They used it if the voting machines in Georgia were actually accurate. And you will never convince me of that. I am to this day convinced that election was stolen by electronic voting machines in Georgia. But if that's the case, they used that vote that whole issue to get Max Cleland out and to turn the Senate from Democratic to Republican. I mean, the timing has been so carefully orchestrated in this war in Iraq. I think that, you know, yes, they wanted the oil. Yes, the neocons wanted to have a footprint in the Middle East. They want to protect Israel. There's all those reasons. But where the rubber meets the road in the Bush administration is in Karl Rove's office, and he's looking at it as a political equation all the time.
Right. They're just opportunists, but it never would have come to fruition had not the whole machine been behind it for years to get there where it is.
Oh, I don't disagree with you.
I'm saying is you just, to me anyway, it comes across as you're highlighting too much of he's the big influence where the influence is behind the curtains, which is Wolfowitz, Pearl, Rumsfeld, and Cheney.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's plenty of blame to spread around for this thing. For
credit.
All these dead, well, there's a lot of dead people. I mean, it's, well, what can we say? Anyway. Thanks, Mike, for the call. Good to hear
Take
from
care.
You. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Jared in Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Jared.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'd
like
up?
To thank you for your show and two of your books that I'm struggling through at the moment.
Struggling?
I have Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception, and The Edison Gene.
Helped
me out very greatly.
Good. Thank you.
I wanted to bring up, you've been mentioning Dean during the primaries.
Yeah.
And I remember one of the talking heads, before the primaries when they were hyping it up, was saying how whoever won the Iowa primaries never went on to get the nomination, which, if that's true, it seems to be the anomaly this past election.
Yeah.
I wanted to get your thoughts.
I don't know the history of that. I can't speak to that. I do know that Kerry came out of that Iowa primary with the momentum that allowed him to become the candidate for president. And had Dean come out of that, if Dean had won the Iowa caucuses, I suspect he would be president of the United States right now. I really do. And that's why I think that George W. or the Karl Rove, Steve Moore, the Club for Growth, that these guys on the right did the same thing to the Democrats in 2004 that they did back in 72, when the polls showed that Richard Nixon could not beat Ed Muskie, but he could beat George McGovern. And so they intervened in the primaries and took out Muskie to make sure that McGovern was the candidate that Nixon would run against. I don't think that George W. Bush wanted to run against Howard Dean because Howard Dean would have kicked his butt. And this is why for the last couple of weeks on TV, this fascinating spectacle of Republicans and conservatives who pretend to be moderates, you know, from Cokie Roberts to you know, Howard Feynman, whatever. These and then of course the overt Republicans, you know, the Bob Novaks of the world and Pat Buchanan's and whatnot, all of them saying, oh, the Democrats will be making a big mistake if they put Howard Dean in the head of the DNC. And, you know, methinks thou dost protest too much.
Yeah, absolutely. I've noticed on the Randy Rhodes message board there's been a number of trolls with the same sentiments about how they're scared of Dean. So.
Yeah, no, the Republicans are afraid of Howard Dean. And the reasons are very simple. Howard Dean was a good governor of the state. Howard Dean is a stand-up guy. He tells the truth. Howard Dean is not afraid to speak truth to power. And Howard Dean has a progressive vision for America that is inclusive, not exclusive. And he's absolutely willing to speak out, to be there, He doesn't, you know, which way are the polls blowing? What should we do? You know, occasionally he puts his foot in his mouth. I think that's great. I love it. And that's the kind of guy I would want. That's a statesman, not a politician. And we have too many politicians and not enough statesmen. I think, in my opinion, just having lived in this state where he was governor for 10 years, where I've lived here for 10 years, and watched him as governor, he's a statesman. He's a good man. So I am actually very optimistic about the Democratic Party. Jared, thanks a lot for the call. And I say that, again, I'm not a Democrat. I've got a lot of problems with the Democratic Party, too. I am just me. I've got my own worldview, my own perspective on this. Call me an independent, I suppose. I think we call this program Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. I think I represent the worldview of the average American, the vast majority of Americans. And you do the polls on the issues. The vast majority of Americans would like there to be universal single-payer health care system in the United States, like most other countries have, that works really well, rather than an employer-funded healthcare system like we have. They would like people to have the ability to unionize and participate in the workforce in ways that are safe and secure. They would like to know that their food supply is clean and safe and their drugs are safe and that they're not being ripped off. They would like to have the air clean and on and on and on and on. Xavier in Santa Cruz, California on the line. Hey, Xavier, what's on your mind today?
Hey, good morning, Tom. First off, I wanted to send out healing and soothing energy jujus to your dad.
Thank you very much.
Welcome. I wanted to ask you about, I recently got into an argument with somebody of conservative persuasion, and I always like to check out my facts. And he said that Halliburton, during the time after the first Iraq war when we had the sanctions against them, he said that Halliburton did not send any funding to these guys. And I did some searching, and I found there's a through one of their subsidiaries, I think Rand Ingersoll, Drescher,
mm-hmm.
they basically wanted to find out is what you know about that. Did Halliburton send any money to...
Were they doing business with Iraq?
Exactly.
You know, when it was banned?
Yeah, and are there links to it?
Yeah, I don't have the information in front of me. My recollection, Xavier, is that they were, but I just don't have the paper in front of me. But you should be able to track it down. Thanks for the call. 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
America's attitude toward nuclear power is worlds away from that of some other countries. I'm Steve Pompa for Earthwatch Radio. Switzerland and Japan generate nearly 40% of their electricity from nuclear reactors. And last year, China announced plans to build 30 nuclear power plants in coming years. By comparison, the United States has virtually halted nuclear construction, relying on the technology for only 20% of its electricity. Michael Corradini is a nuclear engineer at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He says many countries have turned toward nuclear energy because they have fewer resources than the United States does.
The international scene very much depends on that country's ability to get energy indigenous to its borders.
Corradini says Japan is an example. It has no energy resources such as coal or oil. Corradini says nuclear power also gives heavily populated developing countries a way to improve.
The most interesting thing are the developing nations, where they're trying to move up in economic status and standard of living. China's an example, Korea an example. And in all those cases, you see that nuclear power is really considered to be one, not the only, but one of the ways to do it.
Corradini contends that more nuclear power would help the U.S. cut its reliance on coal and natural gas, but the failure to effectively deal with nuclear waste is the main factor weighing against the technology.
If we continue to simply store it and not deal with it, it is not really addressing the thing that many people worry about, which is if you produce waste in the form of spent fuel, are you starting to do something with it?
Japan, France, and other countries reprocess nuclear waste as a way to reduce it. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We don't need no thought control.
No, but George wants us to have it anyway.
No dark sarcasm in the classroom.
And in fact, they want to do mental health testing of every child in America to find out if they need to be on drugs. And then they go after the adults.
Hey, teacher, leave the kids alone.
Speaking of those kids, Maya Keys loves her father and mother. Thanks for the tip. I believe it was Ken in Michigan who pointed this out to me. I might be wrong. One of our callers earlier in the day, Louise just brought the story in to me from the Washington Post. It was in yesterday's paper. Louise and I were on airplanes all day yesterday. We spent the weekend in Portland, Oregon, where our youngest daughter lives, visiting her and taking care of some business. And anyhow, Maya Keys loves her father and mother, says the article in the Washington Post. She put off college and moved from the family home in Darnestown to Chicago to be with her dad on a grand adventure. Even though she disagrees with him on almost everything political, she worked hard for his quixotic and losing campaign for the U.S. Senate. Now Maya Keys, liberal, lesbian, and a little lost, finds herself on her. Here she is, 19 years old. 19 years old. 19 years old these days. I mean, when I was 19 years old, okay, I was running my own business. I was going to school. I was on my own. I've been living on my own for a couple of years. I may have even been living with Louise at that time. I'm not sure, but right around then, anyway. But, you know, kids these days, 19, she's a kid. Alan Keyes just threw her out of the house. Won't talk to her anymore. In fact, when he was talking about Mary Cheney, he called her a selfish hedonist, and he says, and then without having been asked about his own family, he volunteered, quote, this is Alan Keyes speaking, that he said that if his daughter were a lesbian, he'd look at her and he would tell her that it's a relationship based on selfish hedonism, and that he'd tell her it's a sin and that she needs to pray to the Lord God to help her deal with that sin. She says she heard the comments and recoiled. She said it was kind of strange that he said it like a hypothetical. She said it was really kind of unpleasant. Now she has come out and been thrown out. This is so sad. Maya, 19, says her parents cut her off because she is who she is. She says she describes herself as a liberal queer. Tomorrow, she says she's going to take her private dispute with her dad into the open. God bless her. She's scheduled to make her debut as a political animal, speaking at a rally in Annapolis sponsored by Equality Maryland, the state's gay rights lobby. Maya, you go. What is it? You go, girl? Is that the right thing? I'm dating myself here, I guess. I just don't know. Anyhow, give them hell. Tell the truth. Do it right. This is wonderful. I mean, it's a tragedy for the family, but Alan Keyes being shown up for the hypocrite that he is.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
You know, it's even more than a hypocrite. How can somebody like that talk about family values and then not value their family?
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Walmart has agreed to pay more than $134,000 to settle charges alleging that it broke child labor laws. 24 violations were charged against the world's largest retailer, including allegations it had teenagers use paper balers and forklifts. According to U.S. child labor law, anyone under the age of 18 is prohibited from using hazardous equipment. The store denied the allegations, but agreed to pay the penalties anyway.
The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra has been locked out by management for more than 6 weeks, but new talks are set for Wednesday. Jan Gippo is a spokesperson for the Musicians Union. He says St. Louis orchestra musicians are paid $15,000 a year less than orchestras in similar cities.
If we accept what he's offering, this orchestra will leave the one percentile of great symphony orchestras in the world and fall to 19th. And become a revolving door orchestra where the young players will lead.
Gippo says management took away prepaid health insurance from locked out musicians in St. Louis.
Canceling our health insurance is, in labor terms, is a very adversarial position to take, very combative. If we didn't take that position, and he locked us out by 7 o'clock on Monday morning, long before we were going to take a vote, before the orchestra got the proposal to take a vote, he'd lock the door. That's why it's a lockout.
The union musicians are willing to take $10,000 a year less than peers in similar cities, but they say quality of the orchestra is now the main issue.
Hundreds of workers at Garlock Sealing Technologies in New York left their jobs and hit the picket lines on Sunday. After overwhelmingly rejecting the latest contract offer on Saturday, employees represented by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers voted to strike. Union representatives say the contract would have reduced pay and allow the company to change the schedules of workers every 2 weeks. The gasket and sealing product company had asked for $3 million in concessions from the union in an attempt to remain competitive. Company spokesmen have said that the plant may have to close if demands are not met. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The number of gays and lesbians being discharged from the military has dropped significantly since September 11, 2001. According to new numbers released by the Defense Department, the number of discharges under the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy is nearly half of what it was at that time. All military branches have seen drops in discharges. Across the board, the number kicked out in 2001 was 1,227. In 2004, it was 653.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. Or call 215-563-7110.
Ah, what memories we have of George W.'s lavish inaugural gala. Other presidents have been party poopers and tightwads compared to Bush. Jimmy Carter, for example, provided only peanuts, crackers, cheese, and cash bars for his celebrants. And FDR's inaugural, also held in a time of war, cost only $2,000. Guests enjoyed chicken salad. How tacky. George, on the other hand, strutted his stuff with real class, a $40 million extravaganza with lobster, champagne, nine balls, and boogie-till-you-drop private parties for the lobbyists and moneyed elites. You want class? For $10,000 each, Bush's high rollers could enjoy a delightful inaugural package at the posh Fairmont Hotel, including a beluga caviar and Dom Perignon reception, a chauffeured Rolls Royce, and, you're gonna love this, each couple was assigned two actors posing as Secret Service agents, both wearing black sunglasses and cufflink walkie-talkies. But the little people got to participate, too. For example, your average citizen of Washington, D.C. had a central role, not as celebrants, but as funders. Bush's White House forced the D.C. city government to pony up $17 million to help provide security for George and his well-heeled party bunch. This despite the fact that 91% of Washington residents voted against him in November. Forget those sticks in the mud, though, for this was a capital event, literally. The stars were not merely George and Dick Cheney, but such corporate powers as AT&T, Bank of America, Dell Computers, ExxonMobil, and Home Depot. They chipped in $250,000 each to pay for the splashy show and to buy themselves a spot at the front of the line for the governmental spoils that Bush and company will now dole out. This is Jim Hightower saying, the inaugural is over, but for these corporations, the party has just begun.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, Ward Churchill can't say it, but you trot out a Republican, somebody who used to write speeches for Richard Nixon, and somehow it gets said. I find this just absolutely fascinating. Pat Buchanan on Meet the Press this weekend. And occasionally what you find is that there are some conservatives out there who in some realms have some integrity. Now, I have a lot of problems with Pat Buchanan, and it saddens me. It saddens me at least three-quarters of the time when I see or hear Pat Buchanan on TV, and I hear him or see him sucking up to the Republican power structure because he knows that that's what he has to do if he wants to be on TV a week from now, that kind of thing. And yet, his book, Where the Right Went Wrong, other than the last chapter, which was another suck-up chapter, but the first, 80-90% of the book was just this brilliant indictment of the Bush administration, and why can't George Bush learn from history, and here's the history of the Middle East, and let's get this right this time, guys, because this is all screwed up, and I just have to share with you some of the pieces from this. This Pat Buchanan this weekend on Meet the Press, and here you've got this professor out there saying in an impolitic fashion, certainly, but nonetheless saying essentially, well, we were attacked because we have been intervening around the world, and we're viewed as people who are sticking our nose in where it isn't wanted. I don't want to put words in Ward Churchill's mouth, certainly. But basically that was it. It was not unlike what, others have said the same thing, and they get roundly attacked for it. So a Republican comes out, Pat Buchanan, or a former candidate for president, a stalwart in the party, comes out and says it. And two things come to mind when I hear this, and I just want to share a few clips of this with you. When I hear this, the first is, what's Pat's agenda? What's going on with Pat? Why is all of a sudden Pat Buchanan a radical truth teller? I really and truly have a feeling that this has more to do, this has something to do with something larger than just Pat Buchanan. That blowback is happening. That the neocons who took control of the government of the United States and led us into a disastrous war are being viewed now by traditional old line conservatives as the enemy, as being even more dangerous than Bill Clinton was, perhaps. But let me just share some of these pieces. Here's this. He's on Meet the Press. He's talking to Tim Russert, Pat Buchanan.
In my judgment, what happened on 9/11 was a result of interventionism.
Interventionism. Now that's where the United States or any other nation is out messing around in the activities of other countries as opposed to defending itself.
Interventionism is the cause of terror. It is not a cure for terror.
You get that? Pat Buchanan basically just said, we got hit on 9/11 because of what we were doing. And in fact, he's going to get a whole lot more explicit about that in just a moment. Now, what would have happened if this had been a left-wing college professor saying this? But Pat Buchanan can apparently tell the truth on TV.
The idea that the President of the United States, as he said in his inaugural, is going to help democratic institutions in every region and every nation on earth is a formula for permanent war.
And as James Madison pointed out, no nation, liberty can survive in no nation in a state of permanent war. War is the enemy of democracy. And I absolutely agree with Pat Buchanan. This is a formula for permanent war. And in fact, George Bush has pretty much told us this. This may not be resolved in our lifetimes. Welcome to the world of George Orwell in 1984. But back to Pat Buchanan. It gets better.
Tim, and look, the President of the United States has no constitutional authority to do this.
This is another thing that keeps being missed. One of the things that I was shocked by, Laura Bush was being interviewed by Larry King. This was, a few weeks ago, something like that. And, he's throwing softballs at her, of course. And as I recall, it was Larry King. It was one of the, maybe it was Barbara Walters. In any case, whoever it was who was interviewing her said something about, You know, your husband's enemies, the opponents say that your husband doesn't seem to have much compassion for the people who are dying in Iraq. And Laura Bush echoed what George W. Bush had said a few weeks earlier in a news conference. She said, "The decision of the commander-in-chief to send our young men and women to war is the most difficult decision that can be made in the Oval Office." She said, "You know, this is the hardest decision that he shall make." Now, unless things have changed somehow really significantly, if you read Article 2 of the Constitution, which is the part about the Article 1 of the Constitution, which is the part about the powers of Congress, it pretty explicitly lays this out. The Congress, Section 8, where Article 1 of the Constitution of the United States, Section 8, Part 1, the Congress shall have the power, and then it goes to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, blah, 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 blah. You get down to Part 11, to declare war. Grant letters of marque and reprisal and make rules concerning captures on land and water. The Congress has the right to make war. The President of the United States does not have the right to decide whether or not to go to war. He has the right to ask Congress for that. But the power to make war lies with Congress. And this is what Pat Buchanan is saying. He's saying, you know, this isn't even a constitutional power that the president has. And yet George is running around playing this as if it were. Let me play that little piece again, and then we'll get into the rest of this.
Tim, and look, the president of the United States has no constitutional authority to do this. Where in the constitutional do we get the right to intervene in the internal affairs of countries that do not threaten us and do not attack us? If they don't, their internal politics are their own business.
See, now that's even another step. Certainly, obviously, there's nothing in the Constitution that says we have the right to intervene in the affairs of other nations. I don't think there's anything in the Constitution of any country, although that is the Bush doctrine now. The preemptive attack, right? We can decide whether or not somebody's a threat to us and take them out, right? And look at where it's gotten us now. 1,400 of our dead young men and women, 10, perhaps as many as 20,000 wounded, we include psychological woundings, the numbers, 100,000 dead Iraqis, more dead Iraqi children as a consequence of collateral damage, accidental deaths of Iraqi children, more dead than all the people who died in 9/11, and Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. But as Pat Buchanan points out, so back to Pat. I never in my life, in all my years as a liberal talk show host, I never thought I would be playing Pat Buchanan to my audience, but here it is.
As Quincy Adams says,
That's John Quincy Adams, by the way, the son of John Adams, and the fourth or fifth actual Democrat president, Democratic Republican.
America does not go abroad in search of monsters to destroy. She is the champion of freedom everywhere, but the vindicator only of her own.
The president said that on September 11th, quote, freedom came under attack.
Now this is Tim Russert. He's asking Buchanan. He says, okay. And this was Bush's great campaign line, right? On September 11th, freedom came under attack. Like Bin Laden attacked us because we're free. He didn't like that. I'm not sure why he didn't attack Sweden or the Netherlands. I mean, you know, gee, they smoke dope at a cafe there. They seem a little. I mean, if you want to, however you define freedom, they're less restrictive, shall we say? But no, he was sitting in a cave somewhere, and he came across a copy of the Bill of Rights, and he said, "Holy cow, we can't have this!" And that's what the president has essentially been saying. On 9/11, freedom came under attack. What does Pat Buchanan have to say about that?
The president of the United States was profoundly mistaken. He has misdiagnosed the malady. He has misdiagnosed the reason for the attack, Tim. The United States was not attacked because we are free. Bin Laden was not attacking the Bill of Rights. We were attacked because the United over here, because the United States military and political presence is massive over there.
You get that? And in fact, Bin Laden issued a fatwa. He had this letter. It was published in the New York Times. He said, if you don't get your soldiers off holy Saudi soil, where you've got men drinking alcohol and women walking around unclothed from head to foot, and even driving vehicles, God forbid, in Saudi Arabia, because we built that base in 91, and we had been there ever since. And he said, if you don't do that, and if you don't stop propping up the corrupt the Saudi royal family, just to get cheap oil, because Bin Laden thinks oil should be $200 a barrel. He says, we're stealing the wealth of his nation. Because if you don't do those two things, he says he's going to attack us. Now, this was back in 98. He said he was going to attack us. And guess what? He did. And he didn't say it's because of your Bill of Rights. He said it's because you've got soldiers on our soil and you're taking our oil cheap.
Bin Laden, in his fatwa, his statement of declaration of war in the United States, said the infidels were standing on the sacred soil of Saudi Arabia. They want us out of the Middle East. They don't care whether we have a separation of church and state.
It's not about our freedoms, George. It's not anything even close to about our freedoms. It's and not only are, you know, Americans buying this. Well, let me truncate that rant. And to John from Shreveport, Louisiana, on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mr. Tom. John again here. Just a real quick question, a couple of real quick questions. Do you think President Bush has really violated the Constitutional Bill of Rights?
The Bill of Rights or the Constitution?
The Bill of Rights is the Constitution.
It's part of it. Yeah, it's an amendment to it, yes.
You think he has?
I believe that the Bush administration is violating the Bill of Rights, yes.
Okay. Do you think Abraham Lincoln did it in the conflict of 1861 to 1865?
He certainly did, and so did Woodrow Wilson.
Thank you. I'm surprised, but I thank you for your honesty.
It's the fact. I mean, the fact. Wilson with his alien, and so did John Adams. John Adams with the Alien and Sedition Acts, Woodrow Wilson with the Sedition Act during World War I, and Abraham Lincoln suspending habeas corpus, all three of them. And now we've got a fourth one. And democracy is under assault again. And patriots like you and I, John, and I suspect you think you're a conservative, patriots like you and I have to stand up and say, no, we want our country back. We want a free America. Say that again?
I will not fault you on that.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate the call. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush-O, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
NBC Tonight. Joey's got a new Valentine, whether he likes it or not.
Why'd have to be so charming to the opposite sex?
And it's Valentine's Day for Will and Grace. And special guest, Ed Burns.
Might be my last chance at happiness.
Might be, definitely is.
Followed by another Apprentice First. What could bring both groups into the boardroom?
Nothing like this has ever happened before.
Then on ER, it's an all-out brawl.
Oh my God, call security!
Joey, Will and Grace, The Apprentice and ER, all new NBC Tonight.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's
888-242-8272. This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
The Depression song. You know, Louise, we got to get some Jim Morrison. I want to hear 5-1 and one. No one here gets on a lot. We need some shaking it up revolution music. They haven't done that in a long time. There hasn't, or maybe I just haven't been paying attention. Maybe I just haven't been listening. It could be. You know, the flip side of this, of course, is the great music from the 1940s. Remember this?
I'll never say never again, 'cause here I am in love again, head over heels in love again.
This is one of the most famous songs of the 1940s, and there's a little interesting story to this.
Kissing you again, that's just the thing I say.
Because this is actually produced in Germany during the 40s and broadcast.
And said goodbye. I was hasty, wasn't I?
And broadcast into England while they were being bombed. And you'll catch it. Here it comes in just a moment. This is a bit of the old Nazi propaganda. This is when they used to do propaganda, and you knew it was propaganda.
Here is a new version sent to us by a disillusioned Englishman. We'll never say never again. Course here we are at war again. Up to our necks in war again with you. We'll never say never fight wars again. Course here we are at war again. It's just the thing that Churchill made us do.
Oh, Churchill made us do it. It's sort of like Bush.
Before to war, we'd say goodbye. 'Cause war ain't fun, and that's no lie. We like to live, and we hate to die. But it's all up now, and that too is no lie. We'll never say never again. 'Cause and here we are at war again.
Yes, Saddam made us do it.
War again, and we can't pull through.
Isn't that incredible? That's propaganda done right, you know. Yes, you made us do it. Churchill made us do it. Imitating, I don't, you know, I'm not old enough to know who did the original on that. If anybody knows, let me know. Maybe somebody in the chat room knows. The old famous piece. It's a remarkable little bit of music there. From my parents day. And now we find terrorists join forces as cells shift tactics. This from today's Wall Street Journal. Another reason why this, yeah, there you go. Why this simplistic notion of, oh, they attacked us because we're free. They made us go to war. We had to go after. Why this ultra simplistic notion is so destructive. Let me just, this is an article by Keith Johnson, today's Wall Street Journal. Just read the first paragraph. Previously sealed Spanish court documents show no single group ordered or planned last year's Madrid train bombings. What? We thought it was Osama bin Laden trying to influence the election. No, it turns out, underlining the difficulty police face in trying to contain proliferating terrorist cells. No, it wasn't. In fact, they say for law enforcement officials, the implications are huge. Followers of extremist strains of Islam from different and even rival groups are working to rebuild cells throughout Europe. ETA, the Basque separatist group, who the prime minister had originally blamed the train bombing on, had nothing to do with this. And it was a whole bunch of different, unrelated, and sometimes competing, you know, wannabe terrorist groups. And really what they are is a bunch of thugs. They're a bunch of criminals. And the Spanish are treating them as criminals, tracking them down, breaking up their cells and putting an end to it. Just like the Greek did, the Greeks did with the November 17 group, just like the Germans did with the Baader-Meinhof gang, just like the Italians did with Red Brigade. But no, we had to declare a war.
A party at Ed's house. Okay. Will Ed's parents be there? Then the answer is no.
Making sure an adult's there isn't easy.
No, his brother being there isn't the same.
But if you don't, your kid's more likely to do drugs.
No, I don't care if he is old for his age.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Walmart has agreed to pay more than $134,000 to settle charges alleging that it broke child labor laws. 24 violations were charged against the world's largest retailer, including allegations it had teenagers use paper balers and forklifts. According to U.S. child labor law, anyone under the age of 18 is prohibited from using hazardous equipment. The store denied the allegations, but agreed to pay the penalties anyway.
The St. Louis Symphony Orchestra has been locked out by management for more than 6 weeks, but new talks are set for Wednesday. Jan Gippo is a spokesperson for the Musicians Union. He says St. Louis orchestra musicians are paid $15,000 a year less than orchestras in similar cities.
If we accept what he's offering, this orchestra will leave the one percentile of great symphony orchestras in the world and fall to 19th and become a revolving door orchestra where the young players will leave.
Gippo says management took away prepaid health insurance from locked out musicians in St. Louis.
Canceling our health insurance is, in labor terms, is a very adversarial position to take, very combative. If we didn't take that position, and he locked us out by 7 o'clock on Monday morning, long before we were going to take a vote, before the orchestra got the proposal to take a vote, he'd locked the door. That's why it's a lockout.
The union musicians are willing to take $10,000 a year less than peers in similar cities, but they say quality of the orchestra is now the main issue.
Hundreds of workers at Garlock Sealing Technologies in New York left their jobs and hit the picket lines on Sunday. After overwhelmingly rejecting the latest contract offer on Saturday, employees represented by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers voted to strike. Union representatives say the contract would have reduced pay and allow the company to change the schedules of workers every 2 weeks. The gasket and sealing product company had asked for $3 million in concessions from the union in an attempt to remain competitive. Company spokesmen have said that the plant may have to close if demands are not met. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The number of gays and lesbians being discharged from the military has dropped significantly since September 11, 2001. According to new numbers released by the Defense Department, the number of discharges under the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy is nearly half of what it was at that time. All military branches have seen drops in discharges. Across the board, the number kicked out in 2001 was 1,227, in 2004 it was 653.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
But sometimes you can do it. Happy Lupercalia. Happy Lupercalia. Actually, tomorrow is officially Lupercalia. It was today was actually the feast of Juno, the queen of the Roman gods and goddesses. Remember Juno? And so the Romans, for the Romans, Juno was the goddess of marriage and of women and of romance. And so on February 14th in ancient Rome, they would have these feasts so that their girl children would marry well. And it was a popular day to propose and things like that. And the 15th, tomorrow, the following day, February 15th, that was the Feast of Lupercalia, which was preceded the Roman Empire, an older although it coexisted as well, an older festival, which is sort of the point in between winter and spring. Here also, this from, I'm not sure what the website is, the lives of young boys and girls were strictly separate, this in ancient Rome. However, one of the customs of the young people was name drawing on the eve of the festival of Lupercalia, that would be today, the day before. The names of Roman girls were written on slips of paper and placed into jars. Each young man would draw a girl's name from the jar, and they would then be partners for the duration of the festival with the girl whose name he had chosen. Sometimes the pairing of the children lasted an entire year, and often they would fall in love and would later marry. This, of course, before Claudius II canceled all marriages in Rome, which brought out the good Saint Valentine, and there we... And therein hangs the story. So, happy Valentine's Day, and especially to you, Louise. Happy Valentine's Day. Be my Valentine. After 30, and there's the
cat! Oh my goodness!
And 30-some-odd years, 32 years we've been married, but it's been a lot longer than that we've been together. So, and sharing Valentine days. The ability to make money out of war is now, in this administration, being elevated to an art form. And I find this really quite remarkable. There is this theology, this religion, this belief, and I call it a religion because I agree with Paul that faith is the belief in things unseen. And I have my own faith in various things, and there are some folks who have a religious belief system that has to do with the idea that anything that can be done is best done for profit. That is to say that greed is good, and I don't mean this as a moral value. I mean, I'm trying to present the point of view of the supply-siders and the cons in a way that actually they would probably agree with. That and the Ayn Rand folks and whatnot, the objectivists, that greed is good in as much as it makes us, you know, want to acquire things, and that desire for acquisition then causes us to create institutions and businesses and works of art and write books and blah de blah de blah. Now, there, of course, is a fatal flaw in that. For example, my books. I have 15 books in print right now, or maybe more. I'm not. I'd have to go back and look, but I'm pretty sure in 14 different languages. I didn't write any of them because somebody offered me money. In one case, I had an idea for a book where we went to a publisher and they said, "Okay, we'll give you an advance." But in every other case, I wrote the book first. And I wrote the book because I had something I wanted to say that I felt was important. The book's about attention deficit disorder. I had seen how my own son was devastated by this diagnosis. And I thought it was just wrong the way they were presenting it to kids. I thought that the science was bad. And I had a different take on it. I used to work in the field. For 5 years, I was the executive director of a residential treatment facility for emotionally disturbed kids. This is back in 78-83. I'm on the roster of psychotherapists here in the state of Vermont. I just, you know, I looked at it and I said, this is wrong the way that they're handling this thing. And so I have, I think, 7 books on attention deficit disorder. The most recent one is The Edison Gene. None of those were written because I expected to get rich off them. And in fact, the reality is, you know, as an author, the publisher makes about $1.50 a book. The author makes anywhere from on one of my books, I make 7 cents a book. And I think on the better paid ones, I make around 20 cents a book. But, you know, the bottom line is that I didn't do it for greed. And this is where their theory starts to break down. I believe that people who really have a meaningful life and find really and truly meaningful work, it's nice to be compensated. I mean, it's nice that I made enough money off my writing that I was able to, for example, start this radio show, which, you know, we started from scratch with some income from our writing and a few others, you know, an ad agency that we had sold. I mean, it's nice to have the income. But I don't think that's why most people do things. I really don't think that most people do things for greed. I think they do them because there is some belief at some level, somehow, somewhere, that this is the right thing to do. Even if it's being an auto mechanic, that this is something that they love. And I don't mean that in a way of putting down auto mechanics. My auto mechanic is a brilliant guy. And he loves working on cars. He gets up in the morning, he enjoys going to work. And, of course, that is not only the best kind of job and the most meaningful way of living your life, but also the best way to make a living. But anyhow, the conservative philosophy is grounded in this idea, or at least the conservative economic philosophy, is grounded in the idea that people do things because they're greedy, that they're inherently greedy, and or desirous of more, let's say, to strip it so that it's value neutral. And therefore, an institution which is based on greed will always work better than an institution which is based on something other than greed. Again, using greed in a value neutral way. I don't think we have a value neutral word for it. And so what that means is that a for-profit company is always going to do a better job in the mind view, in the worldview of these folks, of these cons. Is always going to do a better job than, for example, a company that is a bunch of people trying to do good. Or a bunch of people who are doing something because it's the will of the people. You see, when we started this country back in arguably 1776, certainly by the 1780s, when the Constitution was put forth in 1787, when we started this country 230 some odd years ago, there was this idea that there would be an institution which wasn't based on greed, but was based on doing the right thing for all of us. That all of us had some role, some place in this, some obligation, actually, to participate. And that obligation took a number of different forms of being a decent citizen, of paying taxes, or tariffs, actually, is how it started out in this country. We didn't have the income tax until around World War I, but of paying taxes. We've been paying taxes one way or another ever since the beginning. Governments don't run on for free. That we would volunteer, and if our country was attacked, that we would participate in defending our nation, that we would create civic institutions, and that we would pay for them, that we would have a police department, a fire department, that we would have public streets, that there would be common areas, whether they were common grazing areas, as most of them originally were, or whether they were common areas for education, which is our early schools, or whether they were just parks. And Teddy Roosevelt, the great champion of the parks, really. That this institution was not driven for profit. And that the people who went to work for government, yeah, they wanted a salary. Of course, they wanted to be able to, you know, buy a house, put their kids through school, pay the medical bills, take a vacation, retire. Of course. But they're not doing it because they're greedy. They're doing it because it's a decent and honorable way to make a living. Now, see, in the mind view of the extreme right wingers, that possibility doesn't exist because they really believe that people are just basically motivated only by greed. And therefore, anything that can be done more efficiently and more effectively by an institution motivated by greed, because greed is the great motivator in their mind. And so now we have, and this is where it becomes, you know, like the dog chasing its tail. Well, you know, what happens when it catches it, right? Or when it bites a little closer in even. This from Newsday.com, article by Craig Gordon from the Washington Bureau. The Pentagon is falling short on efforts to keep elite special forces units at full strength, and now is fighting back dollar by dollar. You see, our government has been taken over by people who have this strange belief system that greed is the motivator. Dollar by dollar, offering up to $150,000 as a bonus to commandos to keep high-paying private security firms from cherry-picking the teams. Special operation units such as the Green Berets and Navy SEALs were running slightly below their authorized strength, in part because private firms were luring away those troops for work in Iraq and elsewhere by tripling or quadrupling their pay, military officials say. So just think about this for a minute. We decide we're going to go to war in Iraq. Now, you know my opinions on that. We don't need to get into the whole, you know, about the war. But there's a war happening. And the Bush administration, these guys, you know, they're so convinced the only way, the right way to do anything, and as Ronald Reagan said in his first inaugural address, he said, government is not here to solve your problem. Government is the problem. Right? So they really and truly believe that anything government can do, private industry can do better. And so the second largest army in Iraq is not the British Army. The second largest army in Iraq is the army of American employees, of American corporations, providing essentially military services. They call it security. We used to call them mercenaries back in the old days. That's the second largest army. Nobody's sure the exact number, but it's, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 20,000 plus or minus 20,000. Well, not minus, but you get the point. 20, 30,000, maybe as many as 40,000 people there. And these people are paid very well. They're paid $100,000, $150,000 a year. How much is a soldier paid? Yeah, $20,000, $30,000 a year, something like that. I mean, it's nothing. And so what's happening is our soldiers are saying, you know, hey, why should I be a soldier? Well, you know, if I'm going to get shot at, I'm going to, you know, if I want to be a soldier, and I think it's fun to run around some other country with a gun and a uniform on, and there's, you know, I guess, you know, we need folks like that to defend us when we really need to be defended. Obviously, Iraq isn't that case, but again, setting that aside, they say, why should I do this just for my country for $20,000, $30,000 a year when I could be doing it for a subsidiary of Halliburton for $150,000 a year, or one of the larger defense contractors? And so now, and what's so ironic is, we need, for example, we need somebody in the military to be cooking the food. Used to be, you'd have some of the soldiers do it, right? They're cheap, KP service. We've hired Halliburton to do it. We're paying these guys a fortune to be cooks, to do KP service. Used to be free. We need somebody to deliver the mail. We've got Halliburton delivering the mail. It's very expensive. They're paying these guys $100,000 a year to deliver our mail. And so now it's coming back around and biting us in the butt. Now it's coming back around that the soldiers are saying, why am I working for so little money when I could be doing the exact same job in the exact same place, only working for Halliburton instead of the U.S. Army, and make four times as much money? And so now the Army is having to pay the $150,000 sign-up bonus to keep the Navy SEALs and the special op teams in, because they've created their own monster. Do you see the insanity of this? Welcome to Bush World. Robert in Washington, D.C. on the line. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
I'm great. What's up?
I was just listening to you and the excerpts of Pat Buchanan, and I was amazed. So I went to the website and read the whole transcript.
Yeah.
And I wish you would have played more of what he said, because he brings up Israel and how our support of Israel has made us basically hate it. Our blind support of Israel has made us hate it throughout the Arab world.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised that a conservative is actually saying it. I'm surprised a lot of things he said.
Pat Buchanan, I got to tell you, you know, some years ago when Pat Buchanan was running for president, we lived in Georgia, and he came to Cobb County. We lived in Newt's district in Roswell, Georgia. And Pat Buchanan came down and gave a speech, and we went to hear it. And he spent a lot of time talking about those people, those international bankers, that international conspiracy. And I got it that Pat's one of these guys who thinks that there's like this international Jewish conspiracy. And he's, in my opinion, I mean, this is just my opinion of Pat. You know, I think he's real right on some things. I think he's real weird on others. And beyond that, I couldn't play more than about a minute, because then we'd violate the fair use doctrine. You know, you only play a little bit. But yes, that said, There is an issue there. There absolutely is an issue there. But, Robert, thanks for bringing it up, pointing it out.
Okay.
And check out, it pains me to say it, check out Pat's book, Where the Right Went Wrong. 10 minutes before the hour.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a 4-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school. They go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, the last liberal outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palisex books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, the Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
With a Workers Independent News feature story, I'm Jesse Russell. Tuesday marked the fifth anniversary of low-power FM radio's existence, and the Federal Communications Commission heard from advocates of micro radio, making good on a promise to consider the low-power community broadcaster's contribution to the media landscape. DC Radio Co-op Selena Masuta was at the FCC.
Low-power FM truly represents a unique opportunity to give new voice to old communities. And so it really holds a special place in our heart here at the Federal Communications Commission.
That was outgoing FCC Chairperson Michael Powell addressing hundreds of low-power FM advocates. Low-power FM is community-based, non-commercial radio stations that cover about a 3 to 7 mile radius. LPFM broadcasters say that their operations are being hindered by FCC and congressional rulings. Some LPFM broadcasters have waited as long as 5 years to receive confirmation for their licenses and travel to D.C. to urge the action. Some of what people like Anthony Mazza with Prometheus Radio and LPFM Advocacy Group are asking the FCC includes opening the door for more LPFM stations to be formed, especially after proving that the creation of these stations would not affect the signal of commercial stations.
The FCC is waiting for word from Congress that they can move forward on their original vision. It's the opinion of a lot of low-power stations and Prometheus Radio that the FCC can do things on their own without waiting for an okay from Congress.
Lucas Benitez of Immokalee, Florida, spoke at the FCC hearing. Benito says radio station has become the gathering point for Immokalee's mostly immigrant farm-working community.
In Immokalee, we have the indigenous people from Mexico, from Guatemala, and the first language is Cancobal, Mam, Quiche, Toxil from Mexico. So we have people and the radio programs give this programs in their own language.
For Workers Independent News, I am Selena Masuda, reporting from Washington, D.C.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You know, some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. And other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. This'll help things turn out for the best.
And
always look on the bright side of life.
There you go. Welcome back. Today, two flags fly over the depot of Zapata. Here's an interesting juxtaposition for you. Zapata Oil Company is the phony oil company that George Herbert Walker Bush founded in Texas way back when, before he went officially to work for the CIA. And they never found oil, although they did have a couple of drilling rig stations right off the coast of Cuba. Operation Zapata was the code name for the Bay of Pigs invasion, where they had two ships, the Barbara J and the Houston. And now a corporation called Zapata Engineering, is paying $350,000 a year to its employees to go to Iraq. The Army Corps of Engineers has set aside as much as $1.47 billion for contracts with 10 private companies, and neither Zapata nor the Army Corps of Engineers would reveal exact salaries. But the first one-year contract the company received in September totaled $3.8 million. Single liaison officer cost taxpayers not just the $350,000 in salary, but $850,000 in overhead, insurance, and profit costs. And for this, we could just have a soldier. Joe in California on the line. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how's it going?
Great. What's up?
I just wanted to call in and say hi. I wanted the conservatives on your message board, and I've been using it for the past 2 years, and I always told myself I should call in.
Oh, is this just to check in? Are you the Joe who joined the Marine Corps?
Yes.
Well, congratulations.
Well, thank you, sir.
I thank you for your service to the country.
Well, thank you very much. I actually ship out to boot camp next Monday, and I promised myself I'd call in. I do get a bit nervous, first time caller of any radio show, but Yeah, just been.
Oh,
with
that's
me
great.
There.
Do you know where you're going to be going? Are you going to Iraq?
Well, that I wouldn't be able to determine right now, but I did sign up for the infantry MOS. So
yeah.
I got a good chance of either going there or another flashpoint and overseas somewhere.
Well, Joe, we've disagreed over the years on the message board, but I've got to say I wish you well. You know, good luck, Godspeed, and I wish you well. And I was really astounded. After, a year on our message board of your arguing in favor of Bush's policy.
It was fun, though.
Yeah.
I got to say, Tom, if I could just say one more thing.
Sure.
I did learn a lot. Many good people on that board, including yourself. And, really opened my mind to a couple things I hadn't even thought about. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you. And I got to say, I was astounded when you said, okay, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is and join the Marine Corps. And I was just like, no. No, I don't believe it. And then you posted the picture of you with a recruiting office,
And I've got more pictures to come. I'm going to, before I go, you said I'm on the board, I'm going to sign up at Blogspot, so I'll put that URL up there and people can check in. And I'll have more pictures to come, so definitely.
That's great.
Keep you guys in the loop there.
Keep in touch with us, Joe.
Absolutely.
Hey, thanks so much for calling.
Thanks,
great,
Tom.
Great
continue
to hear from you.
The good work, please.
Yeah, and you too. You too.
Thank you.
See, this is the marvelous thing about America. I mean, Joe and I disagree on probably 80% of all issues, including the war. And he's a decent human being. And I think I am, too. Here we are. We're all just Americans, ultimately. You know, no matter how much these